Hey folks, Heather Cox Richardson and Joanne Freeman here. Thank you for being members of the Cafe Insider community.
This is Backstage, a special segment of the Now and Then podcast exclusively for you. We hope you enjoy it. You know, Heather, one of the things that struck me and that stayed in my head throughout thinking about this episode was, how does religion work its way into this? I mean, obviously there are religious cults, but there's a kind of belief associated with religion that at least kind of echoes some of the belief that we're talking about with people in a cult. And I think I didn't really realize how deeply that sort of faith feeling could go and how much it was grounded on almost a choice until I was in college. I took a Bible course, I mean, a historical Bible course. We just started at the beginning and read till the end to learn about the Bible and the history behind it and what actually happened versus what the Bible says. And of course,
I can't believe I'm asking this. Where did you go to college?
Pomona College.
Oh, in California.
In California. I loved Pomona College.
How did I not know that? Okay.
What you need to know also is that their mascot is Cecil Sagehen. And what they say for their cheer, Cecil, the fighting Sagehen, and their cheer is chirp, chirp. I'm not
joking.
What is
a Sagehen?
Sagehen.
Oh my God. Seriously?
Yes. The fight song is When Cecil Sagehen Chirps.
All right. I mean, like, we don't have enough time that I could unpack that because, like, I really want to know what Cecil did for the school. But I'd actually like to hear about a Bible course and what people learned in a Bible course.
And another
But we're going to have to hang on to Cecil Sagehen.
I'm always happy to talk about Cecil. Okay. But so the Bible course obviously starts in the Old Testament. And as a Jew, that's, you know, my neck of the woods. And so as we're working through the Old Testament, in one way or another, what keeps coming up is, well, this didn't really happen, and this didn't really happen, and here's what really happened, and this really is related to general myths about this. And I'm sort of traveling along, but every time I learn about something that didn't happen in the Bible, I'm thinking, wait, that's interesting. I guess that didn't happen too, until about partway through, maybe halfway through the Old Testament, I reasoned myself, using what I was learning in the course, I reasoned myself into thinking, well, so if this didn't happen, then this didn't happen, then we aren't the chosen people. And if we're not the chosen people, then what's Judaism? Does it exist? Am I a Jew? I don't know. And I reasoned myself to a point that felt enough like a crisis that I actually went to find a rabbi on campus to ask, how do you connect whatever feelings you have about your religion with facts and history? And what this rabbi told me was, basically, that's faith. Faith is your belief in a system of belief that you can own regardless of other things sort of hammering in on you. Faith is a belief system. And I walked away from that thinking, okay, so I can sort of have faith in the meaning of Judaism. I can totally acknowledge that some historical events didn't happen, but I can still hold on to my religious faith. That was kind of eye-opening to me because I don't think I had ever thought about faith, certainly not in my life, and that was not the answer I expected.
What happened when you went into the New Testament to the Christians in class?
Well, yeah. Then we went into the New Testament and the rest of the class basically freaked out and they were upset and they kept raising their hand. And I happily sat in the back of the room thinking, yeah, well, enjoy it. Because I just had a really tough month and a half there.
Well, you know, for me, what jumped out, as you can tell from this episode that we just taped, what jumped out for me was how much the patterns that we're talking about reflect what Eric Hoffer was talking about in 1951 in True Believer when he was trying to figure out what creates a Mussolini or a Hitler, because everybody's running around after World War II saying, hey, what we really need to do is figure out where did Hitler come from? And he says, you know what? Who cares? Because there's a million people out there in the world who would be that if they could. The question is, how do they get followers? I actually got into it because I was writing about Eisenhower, and it was one of Eisenhower's favorite books. And so I'm like, well, I'm reading everything Eisenhower wrote, so I'm going to go read that. And I was really blown away because he talks about how dispossessed people are really at risk for being radicalized. And he's really focusing on politics, although he does say religion, you know, people can also be sucked into religious, he doesn't call them cults, but they can be sucked into religious movements or political movements. He's very concerned about political movements or any kind of a movement that offers to give you control of your world back, to make you as important as you think you were in the past. They do that in the Hoffer by giving somebody or giving a group of people someone to hate. And the parallels between the MAGA universe and that just have always leaped out at me. And the thing that really, where those two things come together to some degree, and this is going to sound really bizarre, but it's in the Harry Potter books by J.K. Rowling. She, of course, was a worker for Amnesty International who took a really close look at what governments could do to their people when she was dealing with people who were tortured by their governments.
Unlike any other creature on this planet, human beings can learn and understand without having experienced. They can think themselves into other people's places. Of course, this is a power like my brand of fictional magic that is morally neutral. One might use such an ability to manipulate or control just as much as to understand or sympathize. And many prefer not to exercise their imaginations at all.
And if you think about the way she set that series of books up, it is the story of people finding their voice, young people finding their voice to push back against a dictator, essentially. But what's interesting about Voldemort is in many ways, he's a religious dictator.
Okay,
you
wait,
are
I
laughing
have to...
at me. You,
I
are,
am...
you gave me Cecil Sagehen,
know,
for God's sake. I get Voldemort.
Well, what's different about Voldemort is not something I thought would be appearing in this podcast. So how can I not smile at Voldemort? But go right
well,
on
but,
with
well,
Voldemort.
But think about Voldemort, because if, have you read the books, by the way?
I read the first one and then I stopped.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, so you don't know this. So Voldemort has true believers. And the trick to them is the worse he treats them, the more they believe, because that's how, and that's exactly what Hoffer sets up, is because in order to demonstrate that you truly have faith, you have to believe things that are more and more and more extreme. So when Voldemort goes after the family of one of his true devotees, Bellatrix Lestrange, the worse he is to them.
I'm sorry.
Cecil Sagehen. Okay, from now on, no. Whatever happens, the answer is Cecil Sagehen.
But when Bellatrix Lestrange. Now, come on.
Bellatrix Lestrange.
Bellatrix. Whatever. It's okay, I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Anyway, yeah. The whole point here is that for certain people who feel dispossessed, the more outrageous something gets, the tighter they cling. And that's what Hoffer argued. That's what, I am so sorry, Bellatrix Lestrange does.
But here's the thing, and I want to tie back to that, although I will not be mentioning Voldemort, although I just did. But we've been saying, we said throughout today's podcast, we kept using the word dispossessed, and now you've just used it again. And this is what I've been thinking about, and this is not going to be necessarily a brand new novel thought, but I think about it all the time as the sort of logic of the moment. We're at this moment where people have really conflicting views of what the United States should be, this moment of extreme polarization, and one side believes that they are about to be or are being dispossessed of power, dispossessed of authority, that other people are grabbing at power and that means they will have less, that the culture is going in directions they don't want it to go and they don't know how to change that or how to fix that. So we do have this moment in which culture and politics that we're really engaged in a kind of a national, I don't want to say conversation, maybe argument, but we have one group that feels truly dispossessed, things are going to get worse, their world is going to change for much worse, and that's the driving logic that pushes people to think, well, then we have to go to extremes, because if we don't go to extremes, think about what's going to happen.
And it terrifies me that a significant portion of our lawmakers are enabling that.
Precisely. And that it, as a logic, you can track it and that it has a sense to it. The fact that I can sit here and say, ah, okay, now I understand what these people are feeling, that's actually somewhat terrifying. Thank you for joining us backstage.
Be sure to write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. See you next time.